in Numbers 29 is where we're looking at primarily today. So we, at the, up till this point, we've been doing a study on the feasts of Israel and their application to us. Obviously, that's we're following the pattern here in Leviticus chapter 23. The first one was the one that God told Israel, this will be the beginning of months for you. That was the Passover. Okay, when God finally told Moses, all right, I'm going to bring one more plague, and then Pharaoh's really going to let you go this time. No faking out, no changing his mind. This is going to be it. Now, I want you to, this is what I want you to do. And they had, he gave them specific instructions. And so they observed the Passover in Egypt. Then that became an annual observance later on of how God had delivered them. And the fulfillment of that in the New Testament. The 1 Corinthians 5 says, Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. Christ one day became the perfect Passover lamb. And of course, part of the observance of the Passover, a portion of that Passover meal became what we call in the New Testament now the Lord's table or the Lord's Supper. Okay, that was the first one. And then you have the day after Passover is the day of first fruits. All right, you have the Feast of Unleavened Bread, you know, beginning. And then you have the Feast of First Fruits. Okay? And the first fruits, it was the first of the harvest offered to God in thanksgiving. It was an acknowledgement that all that would come was the gift of God. And again, 1 Corinthians 15 says that Christ is the first fruits, then afterwards they that are his at his coming. Christ's resurrection was the first fruits, and even though it wasn't a physical guarantee when they offered the first fruits it would be a harvest, with Christ's resurrection it was a guarantee of our future resurrection. Okay? Then you got a 50-day period, 7 weeks, and then the day after that, 50 days, you have the Feast of Pentecost. Okay? Pentecost is the harvest festival. And this would have been at the end of the wheat harvest. And at that point, then they were, that was the second time when all the Jews were required to appear before the Lord. First was Passover, the second was Pentecost. And Pentecost was fulfilled in Acts chapter 2. When that harvest, that initial harvest of 3,000 saved that first day, that was a harvest, but it was not the entirety of the harvest, it was just the beginning of the harvest. And that has continued to go on throughout the centuries that God has allowed His church to operate. So those first three feasts where you have Passover, First Fruits, and Pentecost, those three, we see, those have already been fulfilled. Okay? Not only that, they were fulfilled in order. Christ was first offered as the Passover lamb. Then His resurrection as the first fruits. Then, according to the same chronology, the Pentecost feast was fulfilled, or the picture of Pentecost, which leads us to think, okay, all of these feasts of Israel have some prophetic significance, okay, which leads us to say, okay, then it seems like they're following in order. The fulfillment was following in order, which is very interesting when you get to the next feast in Leviticus chapter 23. You thought I was just stalling for time. I really am going somewhere, okay? Leviticus 23, verse number 23. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, in the first day of the month, shall ye have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, and holy convocation. Ye shall do no servile work therein, but ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto the Lord. That's all we get, three verses. Because then in the next verses, it goes on to say, on the tenth day of this month, there should be a day of atonement. All right, that'll be the next festival or feast. Okay, but all you get here is three verses. It'd be a day of blowing of trumpets. And I thought, okay, we're going to have to combine this one. But there's some significance here. There's some understanding for us with the feasts of the trumpets. If you remember, those of you that have been here pretty much all along, I gave you a handout several weeks ago on the Jewish calendar. Okay, the seventh month here is the month. I have to look it up. The seventh month here was the month Tishri. Okay, This was the seventh month based on God's calendar, or based on the religious calendar. Remember when God came to all the way back in Egypt, God was giving Moses the instructions for Passover, and he said, this is going to be the first month of the year to you. Okay? Well, it wasn't the first month of their calendar up until that point. Okay, so at least from that time on, you had dual calendars, a religious calendar, if you will, and a civil calendar. And no doubt, the captivities of Israel to Assyria, particularly to Babylon, those things where Israel was relocated for decades at the time, that kind of influenced some of how they would keep things as well. But here, this was the seventh month, according to Leviticus 23:24, the seventh month in the first day of the month. So it was the seventh month on the religious calendar. However, it's the first month of the year on the civil calendar. Okay, so this same day, the first day of the month, was New Year's Day. It's New Year's Day for their civil calendar, or some of you will recognize the name Rosh Hashanah. Okay, that's New Year's Day. Okay, Rosh or Rosh, that is head or chief or top. Ha is the, and Shana is year. Okay, head of the year or top of the year, first of the year. That's what Rosh Hashanah means. First of the year or New Year's Day. Okay, so this particular observance, the you would recognize some of you the term Rosh Hashanah, but this was the first day of the civil calendar. Okay, now it is of note to remember that part of the observances and the sacrifices and all those things that Israel was to observe on the new moon, right, or the first of every month. They gave special sacrifices. There was a daily morning sacrifice and a daily evening sacrifice. There was an extra, special sacrifice on the new moon or the first day of each month. But this, on the seventh month, it went even beyond that. Okay, but how did they know when this particular time was? Well, by the time of the temple, which is the time that Edersheim primarily wrote about. Israel's been in captivity. They've been displaced. They've been brought back. Even in their own land, they were pressed. It was very interesting. This was the new moon, okay? So that tells us it was a lunar calendar, not a solar calendar, okay? And those cycles are predictable, but they're not quite, always symmetrical, okay? A lunar calendar typically has 354 and a half, okay? You want the specifics, 354 days, 8 hours, 48 minutes, 38 seconds, okay? But 354 and a half days on a lunar calendar, all right? 365 days is a solar calendar that we operate off of, and then every 4 years we have to add an extra day in there, on a leap year, so you get 366. But 354 days, so they're falling behind 10 and a half days every year based on a solar calendar, which means approximately every 3 years, you got to add an extra month of 30 days in there to keep things lined up. Okay, that was given to you in a little more detail on the handout. And if you didn't get it or would like another copy, I can dig that up for you. But by the time of Christ, they had worked out a system. Okay, but basically the way it worked out was in 19 years, they had to have 7 extra months to stay on cycle. Okay, so every so often, they would have a leap month. We have leap year, we had a day, right? They had a leap month. They had a 13th month in their year to keep things on cycle, okay? But there were certain things that were very specific. Remember with Passover, all right? The first month, on the 10th day of the month, you set aside the lamb, and then on the 14th day, you offered as a sacrifice. Okay, here, first day of the month, you're to do this. All right, on the 10th day of the month, this is a Day of Atonement. All right, so normally things probably ride along okay. Well, what happens when you get that time of the year, whether it's summer thunderstorms in June and July around here, or whether you get a heavy fall storm, or even a winter, sometimes you get storms that just come and set in for 2 days. Okay, and if you get a really nasty storm, it blocks the sky, and all right, did the new moon show up today? Or, I mean, the sky's blocked for 2 days. Okay? Then when it finally clears up, hey, there's the moon. Is today the first day of the month? Was it yesterday? Was it the day before? You know, well, if you're trying to be very precise and say, all right, I'm supposed to on the 14th day of the month offer this sacrifice, and I want to get it right, okay? They developed systems. You know, by the time of Christ, they developed a system so that those kinds of things could be uniform throughout the country. Okay, the Sanhedrin, as you know, that was kind of the ruling body in Israel. They sat in their place where they conducted their business, sometimes called the Hall of Stones or the Hall of Polished Stones. And when it came around time for it to be the new month or the new moon, they would entertain people. They were looking for witnesses, people that would come in and say, I saw the new moon. They would get several witnesses that would all agree to it, credible witnesses. Then they would declare that to be the new moon and the first day of the month. But sometimes it was 29 days, sometimes it was 30 days. So it wasn't an exact cycle all the time. Okay? So, I mean, like everything else, this became, you know, a little bit of a show, or, you know, this became a time when they would entertain people. You can imagine, some of you would be like, oh yeah, that'd be cool. Some of you like weather. And, you know, others of you are like, I got better things to do than go tell them there's a new moon out. Look outside, you can see it for yourself. So they devised ways to incentivize people to come, okay, and participate in this. But once they determined, all right, this is the new moon, this is the first day of the month, they would send messengers up to the top of the Mount of Olives, a high point there, and they would light a signal fire, okay? And then sometimes they would light torches from that fire and they would wave that on the hill. Well, in the distance, you see at the top of a hill in the distance, then after a while, a fire would be kindled. In other words, somebody was up there watching for the signal. Okay, when they saw the fire on the top of Mount Olives, they would light a fire and an acknowledgement, hey, we got the message. Well, then in turn, they're sending the message to the next hill and to the next hill and to the next hill. And so, no internet, no email, no satellites. They figured out a way to, you know, relay the word so everybody knew exactly what was going on. Well, when Israel was oppressed by enemies or sometimes conquered by enemies, their enemies would have a little fun with them. They'd go up there and light a fire, only it wasn't the new moon. You know, when it get around that time, they would do things like that just to mess with them. So after a while, they thought, okay, we got to come up with a better system. Okay? So eventually what would happen is that for significant times, not every month, but for significant months, once they established the new moon, they would send messengers throughout the country. They would do this in the first month because it was Passover. They would do that in the second month because anyone who was unclean for the first Passover had an opportunity the second month, the 14th day of the month, to observe the Passover as well. And so they would do that for the second month. They would do that the fifth month because there was a fast. They would do it the sixth month because that was the month before what we're talking about today, the Feast of the Trumpets. All right, the sixth month is a month before, just to kind of give everybody a heads up, because New Year's Day, the first day of the next month, they need to be ready to go. They would, again, send messengers for the seventh month, because not only was it New Year, it was the same month. Later on in the month, you got Day of Atonement. Later on, you have Feast of Tabernacles. Okay, then the ninth and twelfth month as well. However, They were like some of us in that, you know, they wanted to make doubly sure that they did it right. Okay? I mean, so if we were to take a survey in this room, we would get varied opinions. I mean, we would get varied opinions within households. How precise do we have to be? Some of you would say, you know what? The best I know, this is the first day of the month, and God knows my heart, and I think that He will accept. I don't think He'll reject my sacrifice. Okay? Others of you would be like, it's got to be right, okay? And we better not mess this up. And so eventually, by the time of Christ, what happens is they began to observe it 2 days. You know, they would observe it 2 days in a row just to make sure, well, if we messed up the calendar 29 or 30 days, we're going to observe it 2 days in a row. That way we know one of them was the right day, okay? They would double up on some of those things. And so if you read sometimes about that, that was a result of them, certain ones, wanting to make absolutely sure that they had the right day. Okay? But you get down here, to the new moon. Okay? Now, the Jewish day went from the evening to evening. Based off of Genesis chapter 1 and the story of creation, the evening and the morning were the first day. So that was the way they kept their... I mean, we're so trained that we go from midnight to midnight. That's our system, okay? Their system that they were always accustomed to was evening into morning because of the story of creation in Genesis 1 and 2, okay? So sundown, the evening, was the start of the next day, okay? So if on the evening, what we would say, let's just say for simplicity's sake, it's October the 29th. Sun goes down October the 29th in the evening, there's the new moon. All right, we would say it came out on the 29th. Okay, well, by their calendar, that's the early hours of the 30th. Okay, because once it's sundown, then that starts the 30th. Okay, so if the new moon came out on what we would call the evening of the 29th, their calendar, the early days of the 30th, then that month had 29 days. Okay, a month with 29 days was called an imperfect month. Okay, if you go through the 30th, and then on what we would call the evening of the 30th, by their reckoning, that's the early hours of the 31st. The new moon comes out there, then that's the first day, and the preceding month had 30 days, and that was a full month. Okay? And, you know, you can imagine the scribes and the Levite and the Pharisees, they made life interesting with all of it. But once it was established, right, here's how it works. This is the new moon, and on the seventh month, this is new year. What did they do? Okay? On the new moon, it says that this was to be a Sabbath. Whether it actually fell on the Sabbath day or not, they were to observe it as a Sabbath. Okay? The same thing with Passover. The same thing with other observances. They were to treat it as a Sabbath, that they were to do no servile work. They were to observe the same regulations for the Sabbath. They were to treat it as a Sabbath day and have a memorial of the blowing of trumpets and a holy convocation. Okay? What in the world was the significance of the blowing of the trumpets? Okay? Well, in Israel, can you think of anything that in their history where a trumpet was significant? Jericho. All right, where God did a work. Okay, when they're even wandering in the wilderness, that there was the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire. But what was the signal from the leadership to the people to strike camp? It's time to move. It's a trumpet. Okay, when they came to Mount Sinai, and God appeared to them, and at one special time, there was a sound of a trumpet, along with the thunderings and the lightnings and the mountain smoking and that kind of thing. Okay, so the trumpet in Israel would have had significance to, God's taking care of them in the wilderness, God's instructions to move. It would have had significance to the presence of God, and it would have had significance of the work of God, for instance, in Jericho. Okay, by the time of David, or Saul and David, when you get down to those years, then the trumpets were certainly part of the ceremonies announcing the arrival of the king. Okay? And so the trumpets had significance in recognizing God as king. In fact, turn over to Numbers chapter 10 real quick. I'll show you one little thing here. Numbers chapter 10. This is the instructions for Moses to have Aaron, have two trumpets that they would blow on at certain times. Verse 8. The sons of Aaron the priest shall blow the trumpets. They shall be to you for an ordinance forever throughout your generations. If you shall go to war in your land against the enemy that oppresseth you, then you shall blow an alarm with the trumpets, and ye shall be remembered before the Lord your God, and ye shall be saved from your enemies. Also in the day of your gladness and your solemn days and beginning of your months, ye shall blow with the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings, that they may be to you for a memorial before your God. Okay, so the blowing of trumpets to Israel was to be of significance that they would be remembered before God. Okay, I don't have to understand why, because I don't have the best explanation for why to accept that God told them that. You blow the trumpets in order to be remembered before God. So the blowing of trumpets was to Israel an acknowledgement of God's presence. It was asking God to remember them at these particular times. It was no doubt connected with the appearance of the king and so forth. And so on this New Year's Day, it was a special day. They would blow trumpets as part of the temple worship, you know, for first of every month and stuff like that. But on this day, on New Year's Day, they blew the trumpets all day long. Now, I've heard missionaries talk about experiences that they've had. And if you have the misfortune of being in a particular city, even in our time, when a professional team or sometimes a college team wins a championship, I mean, people will go around and blow the horns on their cars and, you know, do all kind of crazy stuff till 3 and 4 in the morning. I mean, so I kind of think of that as an annoyance, but really, this, even if it may get on your nerves a little bit after a while, this was not done to be an annoyance. All day long on New Year's Day, the trumpets were to be blown as a reminder of God's person and God's work, and in their instructions, asking God to remember them on this New Year's Day. Okay? So not only do you have the trumpets being blown, you have the sacrifices. Numbers chapter 29, if you've got that. If you don't, you can flip a few pages probably to your right. Numbers chapter 29 gives us the sacrifices that they were to offer. On the seventh month, the first day of the month, you shall have an holy convocation. You shall do no servile work. It is a day of blowing trumpets unto you. You shall offer a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto the Lord. One young bullock, one ram, seven lambs of the first year without blemish. Their meat offering shall be of flour mingled with oil. 3/10 deals for a bullock, 2/10 deals for a ram, 1/10 deal for a lamb throughout the seven lambs. One kid of the goats for a sin offering to make atonement for you, beside the burnt offering of the month and his meat offering and the daily burnt offering and his meat offering and their drink offerings according to their manner for a sweet savor, a sacrifice made by fire unto the Lord. Okay, so there's a daily burnt offering, morning and evening. So on New Year's Day, you have the daily sacrifice. Okay, then you would have the new moon or the first day of the month sacrifices, which was two bullocks, one ram, seven lambs, and all the appropriate meat and drink offerings. Okay, then you had one kid of the goats for a sin offering. They did that the first day of every month. This month, the seventh month, you had all of those plus what we just read. One bullock, one ram, seven lambs, and the goat for a sin offering, and all the meat and drink offerings. So there's special offerings being offered on behalf of the people on this day. Now, let's see here. We got 1, 2, 3 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 lambs. This might take a little while, right? It might take a little while just to slaughter the animals, to catch the blood, to do everything they were supposed to do. And then, I mean, if you put a lamb on the fire, you get a good hot fire. If they're to be a burnt offering, which means they would be wholly consumed, it's going to take a while. But if I've got 3 bullets, I got 3 bulls that I'm throwing on there for a burn. I mean, this may take all day, okay? But on these particular occasions, they were extra. And this is something that was a challenge to me, is that on these occasions, here specifically in Numbers 29, verse number 6, it says, beside the burnt offering of the month and his meat offering his daily. All right, this was a special day, okay? But Israel was not to say, okay, well, I'm going to count this one as both. They were to give extra on that day beyond what they would normally do on the first day of the month. In other words, they had an opportunity to do more in their worship for God instead of do less. And so it was just a reminder to me that instead of looking for ways that we can double up or those kind of things, we should count it joy when we have extra opportunities to serve the Lord, whether it's in offerings or in worship, or you can make many, many applications here. But on this first day of the month, you have the blowing of the trumpets, you have the offering of sacrifices, Psalm 81, and some other passages would be recited or chanted there by the priests while they're offering the sacrifices and going through the prescribed ceremonies for the day. One of the Jewish commentators gave 10 things, said the trumpets would remind Israel of these things. That remind them of the Creator, remind them of their duty to return to God, remind them of the revelation on Mount Sinai, the exhortation of the prophets, remind them of the destruction of the temple, remind them of the binding of Isaac for sacrifice, imminent, the horns, trumpets would remind them of imminent danger. It was to remind them of the day of judgment, to remind them of the redemption of Israel, and remind them of resurrection. Some of those things are biblical things, and some of them are Jewish tradition tied in there. The Jewish tradition about New Year's was this. Jewish tradition says that this month, which was their New Year's Day until God said, all right, it's going to be Passover, Jewish tradition had said that Tishri, seventh month, first day of the month, was the day of creation. I mean, that was the anniversary of creation. It is that time, they had started counting time from the time of creation. Now, if they're right or wrong, I mean, who am I to make that decision? But that's what Jewish tradition says. They would say that they numbered their calendar, their chronology, from the day of creation. Thus, when the Jewish commentator said that the trumpet would remind them of the Creator. Because in Jewish tradition, the first day of the year was the anniversary of when God created the world. Not only that, many Jewish, even devout Jewish people, their tradition was that the first day of the year was the day that Abraham offered Isaac as a sacrifice. Now, I don't know if we can prove it 100% from the chronology. I didn't attempt to try to verify that. Okay, I'll leave that for John Bucher to do. Okay, he's the scholar. But that was their tradition. That's something that they taught, that they believed, that was passed down in their traditions. And for that reason, the Numbers chapter 10, we read about the silver trumpets that the priests would use. But on this day, on New Year's Day, much of the blowing of trumpets that was done on a shofar. That is, a trumpet made of a ram's horn, as a direct reminder to them of the ram caught in the thicket that became the substitute for Isaac. I mean, Isaac was a picture of God the Father offering His Son as a sacrifice, but then the ram was substituted for Isaac. Again, still a picture of substitution. But that ram that was caught in the thicket by its horns that was offered as a sacrifice in place of Isaac, they would use the ram's horn trumpet on that day as a reminder to them of the story of Isaac and of Abraham's tremendous faith that he was willing to offer his son, believing God could raise him from the dead. Okay, so those are some maybe more religious traditions that they had. They had some not so biblical traditions. A traditional Jewish greeting on New Year's Day would be this. May God inscribe you for a good year. Or may you be inscribed for a good year. Because later on, Jewish tradition said that the day of... You remember one of the 10 things, or maybe you don't, but I'll tell you again. One of the 10 things that the Jewish commentator said about the Day of Trumpets was that it was a day of judgment. Jewish tradition said that on the first day of the new year was a day of judgment. That God opened the books and He would judge you for that year. And, you know, judge you. That would be the time when God would determine what your year was going to be like. Or, you know, maybe this was the year you were going to die. Those kind of things. However, in traditional humanistic fashion, they said that God made that judgment on the first day of the month. And it was sealed on the 10th day of the month, on the Day of Atonement. However, you had 10 days in between there. And penitence, prayer, and acts of charity could potentially change your fate between the 1st and the 10th of the month. What does that sound like? Sound like some Roman Catholic tradition? Does that sound like every religion in the world that says we can do good works to appease God or lessen our judgment? Okay, that's not biblical, but that's some of how they have been misguided through the years. So, we said, all right, Passover has been fulfilled, first fruits has been fulfilled, Pentecost has been fulfilled. Can you take a wild guess? The next thing on the calendar that just may have a connection to the Feast of Trumpets? Yeah. You know, that's an easy one to figure out, isn't it? Okay, 1 Corinthians chapter 15. If I try to quote it, I will probably botch it, so I'll turn over there. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse number 51. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. That's the life verse of every nursery worker, right? I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall all be changed. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, Verse number 13, I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning them which are asleep, that you sorrow not, even as others which have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so them also which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him. For this we say unto you by the word of the Lord, that we which are alive and remain unto the coming of the Lord shall not prevent them which are asleep. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trump of God. Okay, so you can see how it's falling into place. We understand that the next thing on the prophetic calendar is the rapture of the church. Okay, announced by the blowing of trumpets. Okay, the first three feasts that we've talked about have already been fulfilled. However, the Feast of Trumpets has not yet been fulfilled. That would be the next one on the calendar, and we believe, based on New Testament truth, that it will be fulfilled just like the other ones that we've already seen in Passover and First Fruits and Pentecost. We don't know when, right? In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, the Scripture says, we believe that the return of Christ or the rapture of the church is imminent. That is, it could happen at any time. However, there is no prescribed date. And while I can't tell you the exact date, I can tell you that Dr. Whoever that said it, the most recent one, is wrong. Because Jesus said, of that day and hour knows no man but the Father. And so God knows when it's going to happen. We don't. Okay, so what is our responsibility in the meantime till we see the fulfillment of the trumpets? It's to work. Work for the night is coming. You know, we're to work till Jesus comes. It's our responsibility to work until such time. Now, what are the two typical responses to that kind of thing? You're going to be called into account for this sometime. Right? There's two normal human responses. One is, conscientious, energetic work, because I don't know when this is going to be, and I want to be ready, and I want to be prepared, and I want to do a good job. What's the other normal human response? Well, the Scripture says, because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. That is a commentary on human nature. That is, the longer we go without seeing the fulfillment or the consequence, the more likely human nature is to slack off. Or to go in. So, when is the Feast of Trumpets going to be fulfilled? Don't know. But my next question to myself is, which one of those am I more like? Am I working conscientiously, understanding it could be today, but I'm not going to be crushed if it isn't today. I'm just going to work tomorrow. Or am I, I've heard this all my life. And some of you have heard this all of your life, and your life's been longer than mine. I mean, it's easy to get to a point where it's like, I hear this, but it may never happen in my lifetime. All right? That is a natural human nature type of response, but it's not the right response. When we find ourselves in that mode of thinking, we need to adjust. We need to call ourselves back to a biblical mode of thinking. That is, that at any moment, the trumpet could sound. All right? Am I ready to meet the Lord? I trust that you are ready to meet the Lord in salvation, but I would make the application a step further. Is my work in order? Is my walk in order? So that I'm ready for that to be presented to the Lord as well. That's a far more sobering thought for those of us who are believers. And so may the Feast of Trumpets, Rosh Hashanah, remind us this morning that we're looking for a trump, and we're not to lose hope because we haven't already seen it in our lifetime, but we're to continue to work diligently with an expectation that God will fulfill His promise, that He will reward us when He comes, and that we want to be servants that hear well done when He does come. Feast of Trumpets is the next on the prophetic calendar, not yet been fulfilled, but we look forward to that day when it will be. Lord, we thank You for Your Word. Lord, it's easy for us to get sidetracked or busy or all those other things. And Lord, I pray that You'd renew in our hearts this